politics and who did what, and the names that we've heard come up and how they were influenced. So it becomes a nice historical event as well.
Yeah, he mixes the history with the actual solution that one side of history was using and is suppressed by British intelligence and the Royal Society of London and all that stuff. He names names and shows the protagonists, which is interesting.
And when Jeremy Bentham wrote about usury, was he for or against usury?
He was for it, and he was a bad guy. He's an Aristotelian Euclidean.
Yeah. So we learn those things, too.
Yeah. No, you learn a lot from LaRouche.
Mm-hmm.
Really. He's, like, really important. Yes. And, I guess Bert,
yeah,
you know, when I post stuff, Bert does it. So he went through some of the economics classes. It was probably a pretty interesting experience, right, Bert?
Oh, yes. Yes. I won't just do dolls right now, but, yeah, it's pretty interesting, actually. To listen to LaRouche with an Ionic and Dobbstown overlay, you can see some points. But they don't offer the solution, but they really intelligently present the problem and possible solutions. But it's interesting to listen to, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's go in more. Let's get another sentence or two from William Henry from either Kate or Katie.
Kate, you go ahead.
Okay.
You have 4:30 to do this.
Okay.
Who's that laughing
in the
background?
I was talking about.
Where is it? There's something funny going on. Just a minute. There was some background coming out of another part of our house. What would that be? Okay. I don't know what that was. Sorry, Kate. Go ahead, Kate. Read. What's your next quote?
Okay. I'm just going to continue on off where I left off about the painting, because he's saying that you can ascend by looking at a painting. So when you discover and
you muffled your words there. He's
going to
ascend by what? You muffled your words.
Oh, it's like he's saying that we can ascend by looking at a painting.
Now, here's what's interesting, Kate. Roxy's been mentioning in the last video that Charles V of Spain, who was the top emperor of his day at the same time as Frederick I of France and Leonardo da Vinci, he was the head of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, he retreated from his emperorship, went to monasteries, and carried around a painting of, I don't know which painting it was, maybe it was the portrait of Francis I or some other thing, and connected to Leonardo da Vinci, and he would stare at that all day long. So he was trying to ascend. Now, what Ion would say is that he was going to other worlds while we witnessed this body sort of being immobile and just staring at a painting. The Charles V had gone off to other worlds. And so, you know, he goes someplace for apparently for an hour of immobility that we see, but he's gone for 2 years in another world. So Ion has a different way of looking at Charles carrying around this painting, but it's I don't know if that's a tradition, but it's an example of what you just read.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Okay, so what's he say about it?
Okay, when you discover and observe a painting, you are part of it, one with it. The reason is because you are creating it. Like the universe, the image is a magic mirror. The waves of particles that leap from the image unite in your imagination. There's no distinction between the viewer and the subject of the image. If we think with the avatar in the mirror, take the veil off our eyes, in a moment, the Buddhists call eka grata, the observer and observed become one. In this way, viewing a welcoming descent painting is a cosmic convergence.
That is so 70s, baby boomer talk. McLuhan said the viewer becomes a screen watching television. It's not a mystical experience. So the words he's saying there, you notice how you passively put in images into your head. That's what you do when you become literate. You become passive. You receive experience. Pre-literate people make experience. Their eyes are broadcasters, not the reception of God's light. They don't passively receive God's light. So He's talking about you passively putting in imagery into your mind and therefore not really exploring what your mind is all about or how it's a camouflage for the actual making of your being. You know, it's really silly what he's saying. Mm-hmm. For me, who've been around the block a million times, so I'm just a jaded expert. A 14-year-old might be interested and respond to that. Someone who's doing lousy in grade 9, can't do the chemistry, can't do the physics, not on the hockey team, that alienated type becomes really ripe for this kind of talk. You know, you knew some of them in high school, right, Kate? KT?
Oh, yeah.
Remember those nerds? Mystical nerds?
Yeah. I do.
Okay. What do you say to what Kate read?
I don't know. Not much. I mean,
why?
You sufficiently gave commentary on that.
Right, but let's take your, come up with an argument against me. Like, promote this guy. Like say where he's correct or something. And put it on.
Well, all throughout history, Bob, people have stared at religious iconography, and they have ascended. They have. There are,
how
there
do you
are
know
monks.
They've ascended?
Because
had
they
you,
leave their little rainbow body, their
person?
Little. What's that? How would I know?
Have you ever met an ascended person?
I am an ascended person.
Oh. you're quoting yourself.
I understood all that geometry. I was just kidding there just a moment ago when I told you that, because I didn't want you to feel bad about yourself and your plight.
Okay, yes. Original response, sort of.
no, I don't know. But I think that, gosh.
Do you know
what
that
to
I
say.
Am, there's an ascended person is someone we've never heard about because they don't talk about it at all.
Right, I know.
So we don't know what an ascended person is, and they wouldn't tell you. See, that's what's interesting. Now, I'm a manipulative ascended person. I violate that law. I was silent for 40 years. But then I decided, well, if everybody else is making noise, I'll join in. So I became the first ascended person who actually talked about it. You can't say that. You can't say you're ascended and say what I just said.
No, and I'm not kidding anyway.
I'm not kidding.
No,
that's what Ian says our job is, Carol and I, is to talk about what the ascended never talked about. In a way, ascension is obsolete on the deepest level. That's why it can be talked about now. Something different is happening, which has got the 418 group a little fucking boggled, all right? They're getting a little confused. They thought they were ascended. Anyway,
so
this,
can I say something, Kate?
Yeah, okay, back to your practical stuff there.
Go ahead, Gene.
Yeah.
Well, what turns me on about this is actually applying the Fibonacci curve to matter in a way that doesn't leave you. William Henry talks about ascension, but leaves you nowhere to go except for making stuff up in your head. But if I can use my eyes to visualize that Fibonacci curve, it's ever expanding. It's constantly expanding at an exponential, you know, there's a mathematical formula to it.
Call it self-similar circular action. That's a spiral.
There you go.
Self-similar circular action, which follows, I didn't read it, but the basic fact of nature is the principle of least action, which is what Ayn calls following your bliss or handling the contrast. Principle
and
of
ever expanding.
Action.
And it's ever expanding.
Also ever densifying.
Yes, energy flux density. Yes.
Yeah.
It's powerful in its compactness. And it's
most
ever expanding.
Most New Age people show the expanding spiral cliche image as spreading out. Like it's a fan going outward, right? So the top or higher spirals are wider. LaRue shows
one
going down to a point. He takes the opposite image, and he makes that spiral go down to a point. Now, that would look to most nerds from high school look like becoming cheeseburger consumers, going denser into denser matter. It's interesting that he counters the ever-widening gyres with a pointed going, getting more and more stuck down in the point, it looks like,
concentrating.
If you've got the other cliche in your mind.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, Bert's getting it. Very good.
Mm.
Okay.
Now,
Kate?
Is that...
Oh, it's Gene. Yes.
Is that expansion and contraction, Bob? Does he include the ever-widening and then ever-contracting in the...
I don't think so. He considered a few of the early 20th century physicists. I forget a couple of their names, but they were associated with Heisenberg. They're well-known guys. Pauli, P-A-U-L-I. They would put the yin-yang symbol into their physics, and LaRouche thought that was a cop-out. He has something against the yin-yang symbol or the pulsing.
Oh, interesting.
Whatever you imply.
That's interesting.
See, that's the point, is LaRouche is going against so many regular assumptions that people have.
William Henry has
so
the yin-yang.
It's so free-form, Bob. He's positing that we have to go further and further out into space simply to change our perception of what our relationship is to the planet and to matter itself. And that's
right. You're talking about going out on rocket ships to space, to Mars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That expands our nature. It changes us and expands us.
And that
and
is
it leads
constant.
To energy flux density and relative population density.
Yes.
In his magazine, in the middle of the Al Gore 1992 Brazilian summit on ecology, you know, those ecology summits of the 90s and early 2000s, they would put out newspapers or magazines saying, the world needs 10 billion people.
When was this? Was in the times of overpopulation?
At the same time, Gore is trying to become an eco-summit guy.
Okay,
92,
right.
93. They could have done it in the 80s. They were saying it back in the 70s.
So
in other words, LaRouche's main intellectual opposition, what he's fighting against, is the whole Green Party thing, the old ecology meme, all the stuff that citizens accepted around the West with their little recyclable boxes. Everybody started recycling because someone told them we're fucking in trouble.
Yes.
We need more ecology, right?
Yes.
The little blue box shows up everywhere.
Yes.
That is evil thinking from Roosh's point of view. You are
exactly,
not recognizing
because he's
that you
talking
need more.
About he's talking about recycle at the level of using fusion to break down metals back to their pure
elements. Yeah, he says
elemental.
You don't recycle. You make new environments, new technologies, like Pons and Fleischmann did. It's the only way you can save yourself.
You've got these young kids
growing up with the greeny part of their high school education. That's the given. They think changing a better world would get back to some stable, sustainable, zero-growth ecology. And that, LaRouche proves, is not
His recycling example is, you know, okay, we're separating plastic by numbers stamped at the bottom of the, you know, the containers. And some we can recycle and some we can't. He's talking about recycling metal, you know, taking apart metal back down to its pure elemental form, like separating iron from stainless steel or whatever.
Yeah, those are ores.
That's
minerals become ores.
I mean, that's beyond, we can't even imagine that level of recycling. And we've been frozen for 40 years or longer.
Now, here's what's interesting. McLuhan predicted that people under the satellite effect would start looking at planet Pluto. And they would start talking ecology. He predicted, and that's what happened. Under the satellite effect, everybody wanted to preserve the old environment, Earth, and keep it as it is, save it from the pollution. Then you juxtapose with that ion saying in the first recorded ion statements called early on howionic.com, he talks about Elvis as adding to nature. Elvis added something to nature. So that brings in software media, Jeff Einstein calls media versus technology. He's taking a LaRouche view. He's saying we have no new technologies, which is what LaRouche is for. We only got media content. So he's correct on that point, that we've lost the hardware evolution, lost in the software media world. So McLuhan said what? What did I just say he said? Oh, yeah. So Ion said that Elvis added to technology and added to nature. That's the part LaRouche misses. The software explosion, which has become a huge disservice, was a kind of evolution that LaRouche was calling for, but LaRouche was looking at in terms of machine tools and making industry better.
Right.
And like building
a land
bridge.
He's a hardware guy.
Yeah, hardware guy.
So he's a hardware guy, but that's not your objection to LaRouche. That's what LaRouche...
No.
Includes, that's why he's included in your quadrant. That's his quarter.
Yes, that's his quarter, and he needs to be juxtaposed in the collage of the tiny note chart. You have to have McLuhan, Thompson, Croker, LaRouche. You have to juggle, like Wyndham Lewis was the model for, part fascist, part communist, part Marxist, part monarchist, part anarchist with a healthy passion for order. That's what we all are, juggling our forms of nature.
Yes. And all night since you started playing Zappa, since you played the Zappa, I've been thinking how Zappa-like LaRouche is reaching for the same thing Zappa does in music in an economic model.
Yeah, higher hypothesis. The hypothesis of the higher hypothesis.
Yeah. Now, that's just so much more than William Henry, than that statement by William Henry, that there's
William
just so
Henry
much
would
more
say,
in there to applying the Fibonacci.
Gene, William Henry would say, we're just hyper-literate nerds who love to chatter intellectually and ignore our chakras and not concentrate on chakric explosion and implosion to get to some other post-3D body world. And that's the Thompson quadrant. That's a valid... criticism, you should be developing that too in yourself. And you will notice, KT, you see the Quadrophenia? He's touching on different memes from different parts of the average reading of a baby boomer. You get that, Gene? KT?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you can see that. Because he's modern, or you could say postmodern. His mind is a collage. You can't come up with just one opinion and say that's what everything's about. That's what fundamentalists do. And if you're a reasonably sophisticated New Ager, you're not going to make that limitation. You're not going to know what McLuhan said, that the literal fundamentalist sense contains all the other senses. So that's why you would include the literal sense, knowing it includes what William Henry elaborates. He goes into the other levels. But it's a collage, his mind. And
now, his work years ago, all you, Kate, Katie and Bob, his work years ago, he would focus on symbolism and wordplay. He would recognize the
similarities. How'd you know
that?
You just looked him up, or are you knew about him?
I've explored that area, New Age stuff, for 20 years or since the mid-90s, since I got on the internet, basically.
Yeah. So you're even, what do you think of that, Katie? She's familiar with William Henry.
Not his new stuff, though, Kate.
Right.
Katie.
When did he write this, Katie?
It's his latest article.
For who? Where does he get it published? It's on his own website?
For a blog. Like a blog or something.
Can you see
Can you
an article
the link?
Like 10 years ago? What would he be saying 10 years ago?
I don't know. He's got some videos from a long time ago, but I've never watched any of them.
But yeah,
I think it's Rainbow Body.
Rainbow Body.
Rainbow Body 10 years ago.
What is it? What's the Rainbow Body?
That's when the Buddhists leave
about
their little shrunken bodies behind, and they die and emits rainbows from their corpse.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear Bert's version. What? What is it, Bert?
I'm familiar with William Henry from Project Camelot. Yeah, he talking about the rainbow body, some type of legend of Buddhist masters in Tibet that they ascended to a certain point where when they passed form, they created a rainbow body. You know, it's,
where is it? Do we see it?
So they claim. I mean, it's just, you know,
okay,
it's
that
very
sounds
visual.
A bit, so what, do your thing again, Katie. What is the definition
basically
of rainbow
the
body?
Same thing that Bert just said, only he said it a little bit more articulately than I did. But, yeah, the Buddhist masters would die, and upon their death, they would emit rainbow colors from their body. I think there's sometimes a fragrance associated with it also. And then,
from the corpse.
Yeah, and then there's a little miniature corpse left afterward. Like a little, maybe 4 or 6 inches.
A little shrunken
inches.
Thing.
Yeah,
something
a little
that shrunken
thing.
David Lynch would do on Twin Peaks. A little.
Yeah.
I mean,
those
he
little,
showed that.
Yeah, in that, or that one movie that you had me watch.
Yes. He becomes little things.
Little
so,
people, yeah.
Okay,
a little couple,
Now, I always have a great explanation of that. That's probably part of the ghost thing, because ghosts are residue from dead people, transition people, that you, who knew the person, see. You see the residue. So it might be a certain kind of residue. That's a good point for Ion.
Well, then there was a Catholic priest that got permission to go over and study these rainbow bodies, the rainbow body phenomenon. And wrote a book about it, Father Somebody or Other.
What did he discover?
That it was true.
That there was colors coming off the corpse.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on in the, what's that stuff called? Verboten or something like that? No, that's German for forbidden. But there's some sort of a substance that materializes and...
Oh, ectoplasm?
No, it's not a Ghostbusters type of thing. It's a Eastern, it's an Indian type of a thing.
Okay. Now, here's what Ian says. That is a corrupted being, a dead corpse, because they shouldn't have died. They shouldn't have transitioned if they were truly ascended. So what is this weirdness they're creating for a B-grade movie of their corpse? Is William Henry aware that Ian says that truly ascended people do not perish? They do not die. They do not have a corpse that was, regardless of how Christmas-like it is. Regardless
I've never heard of anybody ever saying that that we don't die, that an ascended person wouldn't die, except for you.
That's where Ian's original.
Yeah.
Ian is completing
the people say they change or, go into eternal life, but no one ever says that you just, there's myths of Saint Germain and stuff like that, but not categorically beating the grave.
Yeah. And he also says that you, when you do transition, that's some kind of deluded hallucination you get yourself in, just like you thought you were born from your mother. You've always been here, every one of us, and never will go away. Now, the here, you could bring in quantum entanglement and higher vibrations, not 3D body for the here. I think William Henry's he's correct on that point, saying you go to a light body thing, but that's a metaphor. You won't want to get stuck in it. It's a metaphor for what you actually are already. If what you see is not real. Ian says what you see is not real. What you can't see is what's real. But I'm glad that you admit that you never heard of that before, because I don't think people know that. They haven't heard it before. They might not fully understand what I'm saying, but they haven't. This is where Ion is new. Ion completes the mythology in the astral literature of ascension, brings in a new aspect to it.
So how does the guff relate to what you just said? How could there be
a guff
to empty?
The guff is for little men. The guff is for little men. They made the guff. I said it last week. We create the planets, the stars, and the guff because we couldn't handle our concept of what we were here, so we wanted to go to a place where we had constant bathtub bliss. So you go bask in the ocean of the guff without any contrast. That's someone who's had a stressful, physical life and never resolved it and just wants relief from the stress and contrast. So they go to a nice place that we created for them.
So an ascended person doesn't die, but everybody else does.
Yeah. And that's why Ion, he's not impressed by anybody I bring up if they have died, no matter who they are. There are lots of people who never died. I mean, Abraham Sarah listens to this show. According to Ion, Abraham and Sarah, you know, 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Regular listener. Now, I don't expect anybody to believe me, but this is what Ion's saying. We must look at what Ion's saying. Know what he's saying. Then your mind will play games with yourself in refuting it or claiming you understand it. It's something you've been working on for a long time, quote, to get your head around it, what Ion says. He applies eternity to the here and now and how it relates to your existence, your being. And so if we ever put that in book form, just that statement, begin chapter one, first paragraph. Anybody who ever died never ascended. Start with that one. That's where Ion begins.
Wow.
So, yeah, and remember, there are three Jesuses. The one who died, who made the litter at Gutenberg Galaxy, is the stupider one. He died. The other two are also listeners to our show. One lives over in the Alsace-Lorraine. The other was over in Himalayas for a while. The other two Jesuses. Because the book version is a composite of three Jesuses over 1,500 years. Different aspects of their life. Have you heard that idea before, Kate?
Kate? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know that.
From you.
Yes, from us. So there's William Henry. You know, if you actually put down a lot of the stuff that Ion says in a plebeian way of writing, a simple linear book, which I'm not inclined to do, it's just too boring. If someone took what Ion says, made a little book out of it, they'd have quite a shocker. They'd up the ante in the New Age quadrant.
Yeah, because so far I've heard McLuhan. McLuhan was exploring the idea that the simple act of creation is simply responding. The act of, oh, shoot, Bill, Bob, what was it? The act of...
Well, the dram of cognition.
Experiencing and responding to your experience.
Yeah, the dram of cognition, the stage of apprehension, the simple perceptual action of the brain taking in the world around them is the greatest art form and the greatest magic ever. What he says in the 50s. The cliche act of perception is the archetypal motif of magic. Now that's an interesting thing to think about or figure out what it means or how it applies to you. That's another way of saying that what you do already as a human being is the highest levels of consciousness. And then he said television in the 50s is the highest decibels of consciousness. There's nobody on the neighborhood that Katie grew up in when she was a kid who would fucking believe that. They liked a couple of shows, but they would never say, this is the highest decibels of consciousness. They wouldn't even know what consciousness that McLuhan was referring to. So I say that understanding McLuhan, Croker, Zappa, and the Holy Offices is the labyrinth of the mind part of ascension. This is not addressing the non-physical part of yourself, which we're witnessing among Ionauts who are channeling and having Ions speak to them through the various objects they deal with, like Bart and Roxy. They're experiencing the channeling of the media they work with, thanks to Ion. So that would be working with the physical, the non-physical. So then the physical, that's you taking the drops and stuff. Right, Katie? You get that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we're doing these books, we're doing the labyrinth of the mind. And Ion says that is the dominant part of your being, at least for the little man. The mind is. So that's where we put a lot of the action on. And everybody I offer, McLuhan, Ruth Thompson, are good challenges to your labyrinth of your mind. I mean, Bert faints often when he's listening to that stuff that I talk about. He says, Bob, it's just I went around in fucking numb state for 2 days. I couldn't find my mind.
Damn.
Okay, you've been getting away with a lot there, Kate. Let's hear you do something. Say something without reading.
No.
Go, Kate. Come on.
When I first read this article, I was laughing a lot. I wouldn't fall for it, but I could see how the term ascension is being thrown around a lot more lately. That no one actually really understands what it is. I don't even think we understand here what it really means. But
I don't know if we know what it means, Kate. Kate, we don't know, but we know it's not a bunch of simple platitudes.
Mm-hmm. I try to base everything on that very simple thing, that what we see is not real. So matter isn't real. So the mind
there is matter. There is matter, but what you lump into your visual sense is not the whole story.
Well,
very minor part of it.
In a sense, in essence, Bob, we made it up. So that knowing part that I'm reaching for is knowing that I'm the one that's creating the matter. So now,
but you don't know how you create things.
Right. I'm not even trying to figure that out anymore. I'm just trying to absorb your stuff. With that as ground, that matter really doesn't exist. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because like LaRouche, now LaRouche is saying human creativity is the driving principle of economics. And so it's just simply just reach for more than we think we know all the time.
Right.
It's a constant reach for more. And that's simple.
Well, become a student. Become a student.
Yeah,
I'm recommending that Katie read this book, even though it's not what she's interested in. You have to become a student. You have to put yourself into idea zones that are irritating to you. That's the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting so much, the reason we can do this is we get so much bliss from our products that we can afford to have a little contrast of mental masturbation, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah, rough sex. LaRouche is rough sex, rough masturbation. So I think that's why Ion says the ascended person, if you ever met them, you'd be struck at how curious they are about everything. They're they're way more involved in delusion and Maya than the average little man who's stuck in a paralyzed limbo. He doesn't know what's real, doesn't know how to approach it. That's too lukewarm, not passionate about immediate experience. And Ayan says the problem with the Buddhist religion is that they desire to have a state of no desire. That's going to be a pretty hard paradox to get around. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, just read another sentence. It's fun to hear his stuff. It's interesting, the game he's playing, so to speak.
Am I the reader?
Kate or Katie, find something to read.
Did I read that? How about something about the rainbow?
Okay.
They put pictures of Buddhas with the rainbows coming out of it.
Yeah.
Through the lens of the rainbow body, the Mandelbrot set and Indra's net we can see that our souls reflect each other. My soul, like your soul, contains the reflections of other souls. The entire universe can be found in my soul and in each reflection in each soul, and so ad infinitum.
Okay, that's enough, Katie. Or Kate.
Okay.
The soul. We know that Ian says the soul doesn't ever go anywhere. It stays attached to the ghost almost, to the world here. You know, the definition of soul that Ian says no one's ever heard before. And definitely that soul ain't involved with reflecting people. You reflect people maybe
right.
In the guff. That's the closest to the unity you're going to have with other sovereign beings. But you do not have any unity with sovereign beings in this world, in what he calls the physical. So there is an abstract realm that William Henry is romanticizing with literate values. Of mirroring. So
that we're all one.
A ridiculous statement.
Okay,
in
but
light
distinguish,
of Ion.
Distinguish sovereignty from synchronicity.
Synchronicity is
people.
Involved with social mortar and language and media communication. Your social world where you allow other people to impinge on your sovereignty. Sovereignty is your godhood or goddesshood or your eternity self with no problem. Can't fail. That's your sovereignty. That's when McLuhan says the citadel of consciousness is not affected by media.
Okay. Do we bump up against each other in our sovereignty then in a way that's...
That's voluntary. Ian says it's a lot of fun to hang out with ascended people. So you create effects of social mortar, but those effects probably don't quantum tangle you up. You remain detached as you engage. You actually look very engaged, but there's a part of you that's not. You experience
yes.
that with me. That's me. I'm faking this radio show every week by my wonderful amiability.
Oh, it just gets more and more fun every time the closer I get to getting that, Bob, and it used to have the opposite effect.
It's cold and alienating.
Oh,
the
Bob,
man.
Don't detach from us, Bob. Don't go away.
Now, Katie is very detached, right, Katie?
You mean like right now or in general?
In general.
I mean, it depends. Sometimes I'm, like, really clingy and needy. Other times I'm detached.
All right. Well, you disappoint me, Katie. I thought you were ascended.
No, I was kidding.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were kidding with the kidding.
Mm-mm.
I thought you were
Mm-mm.
underneath that, serious. Anyway,
no.
Joking. But the point is that let's hear you read a section. Kate has read a lot. You pick one.
I set my paper down. Let me go pick it up again.
Okay, when you went and got the muffin, you're not even involved in this conversation.
It was a cupcake with buttercream icing.
Okay.
Homemade.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Oh,
I'll
stop.
Have to get Carol to make me one.
So delicious.
That sounds good.
Let's see. So the Buddha part's kind of toward the end.
Go to the front. Let's hear his opening statement.
The mythology and religious traditions of many cultures, even without physical contact.
Okay, that, right there, Katie.
Yeah,
that's
religion.
The mythology and religion, that's what I'm calling the astral body, the corpus of spoken and written religion wisdom that guides people to something beyond the physical. Right? You
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's quoting the astral body. Let's hear that.
Okay. So the mythology and religious traditions of many cultures, even without physical contact, feature tales of mystics who phoned home and contacted a divine light being, an avatar, part of a tribe of perfected light humans, and ascended to purer or perfected realm beyond this one, out of which they and we emerge. There are many names for this realm, the pure land, the field of dimension of the blessed, Aton, Sion, and the real world are a few of them. There have been many representatives from the real world. Melchizedek, Amitabha Buddha, and Krishna are examples. In the Gnostic tradition, Christ is the perfected one who answered the call. He incarnated in human form or walked on water of the human body, which is over 70% water, and entered a human consciousness to remind us of our robe of light and to lead us on our return to the illumined realm.
Okay, Katie, he is citing the Gnostic religion. He might be a member of the Gnostic Church. You know, that opens with Gnostic propaganda. He's trying to turn people on to the Gnostic view. These are people, little people who are lapsed Catholics, lapsed Protestants, lapsed Jews, or are Jews but don't even know about this stuff. So he's speaking to a pre-Ion audience of little people. And people who have never heard those ideas would be floored. It's interesting, though, he quotes Hollywood. He's actually following the movie archetype. The movie was the creator of Jung in the collective unconscious. So he says, phone home. He riddles his talk of sacred literature with the ascension and the ecstasy of the media environment and is unaware of it, unaware of what electric media does to people. In the long run, electric media is going to ascend people by default. So he's acknowledging that unconsciously with his references to movie archetypes.
Right. And the rainbow body, like, so that was the beginning. Let's read the last sentence.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, last paragraph.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Icons were specially created to enable a visceral encounter with a holy being or to make present a spiritual energy. They are a form of visual alchemy that can help us in our transformation. They are a form of quantum entanglement. The materials of the Transfiguration icon become a channel between two worlds. To an Orthodox Christian, these images are a medium through which the whole may be approached and grace channeled like a two-way mirror. When Christ transmits quantum data to the viewer, he is essentially teleporting and putting us in a state of being. As the man of heaven, so also are those who are of heaven. Just as we have borne the image of man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. That's 1 Corinthians 15, 45-49. So as we take a moment to contemplate, meditate, and reflect on the images presented here, we are the quantum star seeds, beamers, entangled in a mystic union with Christ.
Wow, a lot of cliches. Now, the Emerald Tablets comes in 32,000 years ago at the beginning of fallen humans. They've fallen from the continent and the ascended continent, the one continent that the seven continents broke off from. When anthropologists look at Aboriginal tribes, they have a remarkable democracy, not literal democracy, but of an ecology or appreciation of each other and everybody's roles. Thompson has a map of the four roles in Aboriginal tribes at the beginning of his book, At the Edge of History or Passages About Earth. I think it's At the Edge of History. Interesting chart he makes. But there's no hierarchy. So the image we have of aboriginals is the image of ascended man. What Ion says is caveman who didn't know they died, if they did. So once writing in the eye and astronomy takes over, you start to get the pyramid and the hierarchy. And that's in the Emerald Tablets. You have ascended person, Thoth, saying to other people who want to become ascended, the problems of being ascended, because the mass man around you, the little man around you, is forming into societies that are becoming quite strong and stuck in social mortar, especially when writing comes in. So he is speaking from a hierarchical point of view, which does not exist pre-writing or after writing. The iron says the guff will be obsolesced, removed, and everybody will be who's here will be ascended, most of them by default. They're going to get there without knowing how it happened. And the electric media are part of the catalyst. So everything he's citing there is from the visually biased perspective of someone above you. Now, there are people who don't die, and they're different, but they don't engage in social mortar. They don't create systems. They don't tell anybody they're ascended. They don't create, you know, astral literature. But he really is, in general, retrieving, which I say the New Age is, the old literate sensibility, which created a hierarchy, as an identity blanket for people who can't handle the huge democracy of our digital life. Of our tactile digital life. So, did you follow any of that, Kate, Pete?
Yeah, they don't have a yoga, so he's just giving them a pablum.
Right. Yeah. And it's a new media yoga that's required, not the Buddhist yoga.
Right.
You know, I about a year ago, I was listening to some obscure Ion thing. I don't know if I ever played it, but he said that yoga, that whole discipline, you know, was developed like 2000 BC or something, way back there. And after a few years, or maybe a generation, they decided it didn't work, and it was abandoned by the guys who created yoga. And here it lingers for thousands of years in social mortar, in writing, because it got written about. But the actual guys who did it said it didn't work. See, that's where social mortar creates knowledge and archetypes and motifs that linger beyond what humans actually experienced. It's a new parallel world writing creates. Why does that make you laugh, Gene?
That's funny.
Because here that's typical. Here on Saturday night, you know, you tell history after history, pieces of history where it didn't work. You know, they tried here and it didn't work.
Right, right. But media preserves it.
Yes, and retrieves it and
yeah,
flips
it
and obsolesces it. Yeah,
just
the word Christ. The New Age people seem to have to use that word Christ to. It's almost like to appeal to as many audiences as they can. They'll pull those words and use them to give you a frame of reference, and then then you're stuck in that frame of reference.
Yeah, which Joyce did. He included all the frames of reference, but it's illegible. You have to learn how to perceive it. A truly ascended person would agree with Ion. The only important books are the Bible and Finnegan's Wake. And the ascended person would know how to read them, but to see is what's in there, what their roles are. You know, the Bible is about the citadel of consciousness and the sovereignty that you are. But it warns, once you get to John the Revelator, about social mortar that's going to take over for the next 2,000 years, from 2,000 years ago up to now. And then Nostradamus sees modern Los Angeles and lays that out, the world of mortar. And then Finnegan's Wake is the Bible for seeing through social mortar. The perfect bracketing here. McLuhan used to like to say that Alexander Pope's The Dunciad, which was the beginning of the printing press reality, and he was warning about the dullness that was taking over people from reading too many books or having that book environment. And then so Alexander Pope began with The Dunciad, and then Joyce wraps it up with a breakthrough, how the electric age is going to diminish the problems that Alexander Pope saw, moving us into a Marconi galaxy. And then there's doubt about from Joyce about that, but he's pointing out Finnegan's are awake. So in McLuhan land, from Pope to Joyce, they're the complementary texts.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a wow. Did you see? Remember, I posted on my Facebook page the other day. The name calling, HCE is, you know, some local mayor or something. He's many different kinds of leaders in a town. And somebody, some malcontent, comes to his home at midnight and bangs on the gate of HCE's mansion with a beer bottle and throws insults at him. So I listed the insults. You probably saw that, Bert. You probably liked
it. Yes.
You like everything I
post.
You liked it. And this incredible list of insults and puns, punned historical names. And I said, this is the Internet. This is Web 2.0. That's how humans communicate in our social life now. They're flinging names at each other. So Joyce listed a bunch of names, an exaggerated list, and that had no relevance to anybody in 1930 when they read it. But it is our experience now. He was prophetic in the world of social media, where communication was going.
Yes.
You know, did you see the article I posted about how they make bots, how the Russians make bots, how they most of what you read in commentary is bot stuff, B-O-T? You know about that, right, Katie?
I know about it, but I didn't see the article.
Yeah, it's a pretty good article. It's some university academic study where they show how the technology, how it feeds on itself. They like target a famous senator and rip off his Twitter address and then spiral excessive commentary automatically. So this is what I meant by the Android meme. We've been living in the Android meme for like 20 years or more, which is communicating beyond para to human scale. We are witnessing media talk to itself or technology talk to itself. And there's no place for the human to find an anchor in that. It's not your world. And so if they're saying most of the communication in the argumentative zones are bots, then that's the Android meme, technology communicating to itself.
Yep.
So what would archetypes would William Henry see in Trump? Would he admit or know that Trump's an ascended person? In social mortar.
I would imagine he's just your basic liberal.
Right. I mean, to take people on tours of the pyramids in light of Ion is ridiculous. But you got to make some money, got to pay your rent. What could you say of interest, what you've learned about the pyramids or wherever he's, I think he does tours in the pyramid land, right?
I don't know if it might be just like Europe. Looking at art, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Oh, it was art, right.
Yeah.
And not to incorporate Ion stuff, because every artwork has a commentary as part of the artwork is from non-physical. Non-physical. Since you get your art from non-physical and you're getting your ideas from non-physical, from, quote, the Akashic Records, say, even though Ion doesn't like that term, therefore, all art has the imprint of the non-physical that the artist doesn't know about. So it's not archetypes of known avatars, as his wife demonstrates. It's geometry or some kind of patterns or ciphers, Ion calls it, that's in the art that has nothing to do with anything humans know. So William Henry is a fine tourist manager. He's a tourist. He sponsors the art world as something to wander around passively, claiming to know what they're about.
Well, we had a nice little chat for 2 hours and 24 minutes and 45 seconds.
I'm not putting it down.
Yeah. No, I know. It was a good... It was a good thing
chat.
What
have you gotten from this? Has anybody got any major insights from this?
No. Well, I mean, that's not true.
Yeah.
We'd learned about Fibonacci economics.
Everything I said is what you learned.
Well, that's why we bring it to you, Bob.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm not complaining. Neither are you. You're not complaining.
No, but, not complaining.
Yeah, we're not. But there shouldn't be a tone of, well, we did this. You know, it's important what we did. It brought new ideas to me.
It's just because I'm starting to fade. I'm starting to get tired, and I'm probably going to need to go because I have my ice skating lesson, and I can't be tired because if I fall, I'll hurt my tailbone.
Yeah, you're ice skating tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, no, you did a good job.
Yeah.
I think you should make a wrap-up statement or read another quote, somehow cap off or say an idea of what we've talked about.
Well, I guess I would just say, if you don't know anything about ION, then you're just going to keep trying and trying and trying.
Right.
But you're not quite going to get there. That
right.
would be what I would say.
And
nice
if that may sound like a cult. That may sound like we're a cult. Well, to the degree that you think a cult is like that, yeah, we're a cult. But we don't
sure.
act like a cult.
No.
We try not to be a cult. But if you're interested in new ideas, this is where you come to.
This is where
I mean,
you come
new ideas
to.
Are just things you've never heard said.
And I just appreciate Kate getting up at 4:30 in the morning
yes.
to come and do this, because that was the goal, too, was to have the Kate and Katie Bob extravaganza.
All right. Let's have Kate make
yes.
ask Katie a question.
I was going to say that I think you should really send this to Henry.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to send it to Henry. Maybe Katie can get us the email.
Oh, just go on his website. It's right
okay.
there.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, send me his email for his website, even though it's probably really easy. I just need to write it in, right? William Henry, it'll come up.
Yeah, it'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so Kate, tell us, address a question to Katie about what we're attempting to talk about. She began
okay.
by asking you a question.
So, if you had a painting of yourself with all the rainbow colors all around it, would you stare at it and think that you can receive light from Christ from your painting of yourself?
Good question.
You know, in all honesty, I would probably do that.
Why?
I would
Why
take
would
some
that?
Drops, and I would sit in, if it was me in my rainbow body, not Buddha, but I probably would, just for fun, I would. Take some drops and
right.
sit and stare at it. I would. Couldn't hurt.
But when I send you the PDF for the Roos book, not likely to be done, right?
You know, I'll read a little bit of the Bruce book. What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell? What the hell?
Yeah, I'd read a little bit. Actually, I mean, I'd be more interested in going back and looking at some of the Medium in the Light right now at this particular
yeah.
juncture. I mean, there's just so many things. It's like you want to pick kind of what you resonate with. And
right.
that, I mean, I don't know anything about economics to begin with. Like basic economics.
Matter? Everything you ever heard of is wrong, according to
right,
Ruth. Explain to you why it's wrong.
But like I would,
now, he may not be right, but he's pretty good at explaining how everything else is wrong.
Yeah.
Then we can watch the. I'll send you the TV series. You can go through 11 shows where he has his followers spell out his economics, and it's quite easy to take. That's something that you like watching TV.
Yeah, I'm giving it up for Lent, though, so I only got a couple of days here, Bob.
Well, it's only 11 shows. You have lots of time. You'll get it.
I only have till Tuesday.
Well, you can do some tomorrow, then.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, send it to
me.
Yeah, look, maybe. I'm not going to say yes. I got ice skating, you know. I got to loaf around. I got to have some slack.
Ice skating. You got much to do.
Yeah, I do. Got to go to Mass.
But maybe make it a priority over the next 3 days to watch it. Watch what you can.
Maybe. I'm not promising anything. But I would look at some more of the Medium of the Light and talk to you about that, you know.
Okay, the book.
Yeah, because we did
yeah,
that
do
very
you have
quick.
A copy?
Yeah, we looked at that maybe 5 years ago.
Okay, you want to do it again?
Deeper and, like, slower.
Okay, good. That's
yeah.
a good idea.
All right, let's do some of that.
Yeah, I'm always quoting some of the basic themes that McLuhan lays out there.
Yeah.
As applied to religion. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to go to bed, you guys. Going to want to follow my butt. It hurts a lot when I do that.
Well, Katie.
Right. Well,
how's your
thank
critters?
You for the topic.
Okay. Oh, the critters. Are... What's
yeah.
that?
Are you having
and right now my clock.
It covers... Okay, I'll just say my bit, then you say your bit. Excellent
okay.
topic because it goes into the quadriphenic, you know, Gnostic today. That's a good update of their world. Okay, Bert or somebody was saying something?
Gene.
Oh, Gene was asking me about my animals, which was so sweet.
Yeah.
It's pouring rain here tonight, so they're all kind of soggy. Not really happy about that, but we needed the rain, so that's good.
Well, that's good.
Thanks, Katie. Good topic. Good talk.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, have fun.
Nice
day.
Bye, Katie.
Bye, everyone.
What did you say? Just a minute, Katie. What did Sarah say?
I'm excited about you getting to ice skate.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Okay.
And Sarah, I had, I think I called you one day and you didn't call me back.
Yeah, I just got a new phone. I was going to text you right away.
You should have my number, okay?
The show's
so you get in that headspace,
yeah.
You have my number, okay?
Yep, that's why I was going to do it so you'd know it was me for sure. Yep.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so Katie, do I ever recommend TV shows to you?
Yeah.
Okay,
you do.
Well, someone I meet on the walk recommended Godless. I've watched the first episode of Godless. There's only 7 shows. First one is 1 hour and 10 minutes. Second one's about just a little 1 hour and 9 minutes. But pretty interesting show, Godless.
What's that about?
The Wild West in 1890.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. It's where they're... anything goes in an amusement park type of a place?
No, that's Westworld.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You're right.
Yeah, Godless, you probably don't know. It just came out in November. I never heard of it, but it has the woman, the main princess in Downton Abbey, the black-haired daughter. She plays this person out in the Wild West. So
well, I would love to see it just for that. Hey, and you know what else is pretty good is the... Electric Dreams. It's Philip K. Dick short, like hour-long standalone episodes, Amazon Prime.
Okay,
so it's
kind of
like
good.
Black Mirror, only it's all Philip K. Dick shorts.
Neat. Okay, good.
Good.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I've seen Black Mirror. Okay, great.
And one thing let me say about Godless, I just watch in the background sometimes, they all wear big hats. The main thing about it,
they
all wear big hats.
Well, they're cowboys. But when did you watch it, Carol?
Just over your shoulder as I passed by.
Oh, yeah, you saw a couple images. Yeah. Well, the hero, well, one of the main characters got no hat on. Roy Good is the character. He didn't have any hat.
Okay. I look forward to not seeing his hat.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot, Kate. As Carol
thank
said,
you guys so much. We'll talk again really soon, Bob. I'll send you more topics. Good night, everyone.
Yeah.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.